covers everything from Princeton and Trenton above. Everything below that imaginary line is the Southern New Jersey chapter, which is also called the Goose Goslin chapter. We're here to talk about Mo Drabowski and the 1966 World Series. I hope by the end of the presentation, you will get a better sense of Mo, not only professionally, but personally. My voice is a bit hoarse, so I ask for your indulgence. There will be a PowerPoint presentation, and there's a caveat. This is only my second time using PowerPoint with visuals. So if I stumble a bit, if the wrong slide comes up, I just ask for your indulgence and your patience. So before I begin the presentation, I want to start with a question. I want you to talk to your neighbor, whoever's in front of and back of, to the left or right. What is your favorite World Series moment? Now, it need not be something that happened in your lifetime. If you're a history buff, and we're all history buffs, your favorite moment might be Babe Ruth calling his home run in the 32 World Series. So take 1 minute and then we'll regroup. Okay, let's regroup for a little bit, get some class participation. Bob, kick us off here. Kick us off. What's your favorite World Series moment? Mets versus the Orioles. Oh, we got some Mets fans. Dan, what's your favorite moment? We got two Mets moments in a row. Herman, what's your favorite World Series moment? Sam, what about you? Swoboda's catch. How about some volunteers? Yes, sir. Probably the most iconic baseball photo, in my opinion. Yes, let's go over here. Yes, sir. No, over here, and then you. Mazeroski. Gibson. we'll go across the room. Yes, sir. That's a true baseball fan. Over here, and then we'll come back. Yes, sir. Orange, and then you. I don't think we've had one repeated moment yet. Over here, and then Charlie. 79? Wow. Yes, Charlie. Over here? Oh, the Rose catch. Yes, sir. I'm so glad you mentioned Poland because Mo Drabowski was Polish. We'll get one more, John. There you go. Mo was not the likely figure to strike out 11 batters in one game in a World Series. I think we're safe in saying that. I do have a prize, here it is, for whoever can tell me right now who was the opposing pitcher in game one of the World Series in 1966. Just shout it out, whoever's first. I think Dixie got it first. Dixie, catch. Oh, you didn't? Well, I thought I heard you. Someone over here said it. Who said it first? Who said it first? You did? Someone back here is claiming it, so we'll give it to him. So, Mo emigrates from Poland in 1938 with his mom. Nazi Germany is encroaching on Europe, committing all sorts of atrocities. His father comes over a year later. Mo, as a child, is always throwing something. It could be a rock, it could be a mud pie. And after doing research, and please forgive me, my voice is hoarse. After doing some research with Mo's family and some archival newspaper research, it appeared that Mo was a fun-loving prankster. He never pranked to demean someone, to mock someone. He wasn't nasty. It wasn't engaging in any kind of hijinks to really make someone feel bad. These were benign pranks, like putting goldfish in the water cooler. Although I did read a story, someone mentioned 1970, that he gave a hot foot to Bowie Kuhn, the commissioner, during the 1970 World Series, which I don't think is advisable, and certainly not benign. Now, if I say the word 60s or 1960s, at least half of you probably are thinking hippies, counterculture, Vietnam, Smothers Brothers, psychedelic font in advertising, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think you can split the 60s up into three parts. That's 67 to 69. 60 to 63, we're still in the Eisenhower aftermath, Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best. And I'm talking now about popular culture. 64 to 66, after Kennedy is murdered in November of 63, think about what was on television at the time in a three-network universe. Benign, silly, goofy shows. Remind you of anyone? Gilligan's Island, F Troop, Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, I Dream of Jeannie, Bewitched, My Mother the Car, possibly the worst television show ever, next to Ball 4, starring Jim Boughton, based on the book. So I fell in love with the story of the 1966 season, and I didn't really know too much about Moe's personal or professional story. I didn't know that he was a journeyman. He didn't really have a team in the sense of Al Kaline, whom someone mentioned, Reggie Jackson, primarily with the A's and the Yankees, Dave Winfield, primarily with the Padres and the Yankees. Moe bounced around from team to team. And yet, he was always liked. He was always amiable. You mentioned Moe Drabowski, people light up. I talked to members of the Dodgers of 66, and they remembered him quite fondly. He was a character. And in 64 to 66, what else was going on? It was a fun-loving atmosphere. You've all heard of the Rat Pack. You've probably seen the documentaries. I don't think there's a person in this room who can say that Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and Dean Martin took themselves seriously on stage. They took their craft very seriously. But on stage, their personas were just easygoing guys. And that's the kind of a guy that Moe was. The 66 Orioles, as I said, if you had a crystal ball on October 5th, 1966, and the crystal ball said a pitcher will strike out 11, you're probably running to your bookie and betting on Koufax, if you have a bookie. And if you're not having a bookie, you probably would go out and get one, because that's a sure bet. If the crystal ball said, no, it's not Koufax, you would say it's got to be Drysdale. And if the crystal ball says it's not Drysdale, Palmer, the 20-year-old rookie, maybe? Moe comes into the game in the third inning. Now remember, at this point in his career, he had shifted. He had been a starting pitcher. He's now a relief pitcher. But to come into the game in the third inning is a very rare thing. It happens. It doesn't happen a lot. The other thing to remember is that the Dodgers had to take the entire season to win the pennant. So I talked to Wes Parker about this. He said by the time they got to the World Series, they were exhausted. The Orioles had clinched a couple of weeks beforehand. So that mental burden was lifted. Even so, even with being tired, even with the mental burden and physical burden of capturing the pennant against the Giants and the Pirates, there was a three-way tie right up until the end. Even so, striking out 11 is a hell of an accomplishment, and it's never been duplicated by any pitcher since 1966. And we've had wonderful pitchers in the World Series since 1966. Not one has reached 11. I do have a bit of time. I want to point your attention to the screens. I have a PowerPoint, and I couldn't really think of a way to capture the emotion and the genesis and the history in the limited time that we have. And we do have to get out of here at 8:25 on the dot. Charlie has a session at 8:30, Charlie Vassalaro. So we want to be respectful of his time. So I thought about how best to do this. And I thought it was funny that the Orioles and the Dodgers are both transplants. The Orioles used to be the Browns. The Dodgers used to play in Brooklyn. So there was a definite excitement for both teams. It was still fairly new to have a major league team in LA and Baltimore. And I started to think about Casey at the Bat because it's such a wonderful poem. So I rewrote the poem, and I call it Drabowski on the Mound. Now, what the poem does is it summarizes the genesis of the teams and the 66 series and Mo's life. So again, I ask for your indulgence if I skip a slide or it doesn't quite match up. And again, I thank you for your patience with my hoarseness. So let me make sure this is working. Is it working? Yes, okay. Can you hear me in the back? Okay. In November 53, the Browns ended their time in St. Louis. They moved to Baltimore and became the Orioles. 54 marked their debut. O'Malley abandoned Brooklyn after the 57 season and suffered many a slander. LA welcomed Dodger Blue to a region that was sunnier, seemed grander. The Dodgers swept the Yankees in 63 and won the World Series again in 65. 1966 would be more of the same. They'd win in game 4 or 5. The outlook was not bright for Baltimore, everybody knows. Conventional wisdom favored Los Angeles against the beloved O's. Tommy Davis had played in 100 games and batted 313. Willie Davis batted 284 thanks to judgment that was keen. Koufax won 27 games. LA had the skill to win it all in 66. Pundits respected Baltimore, but they didn't show it in their picks. Hank Bauer helmed the Orioles, a veteran of World Series glory. 7 titles as a player with the Yankees. That was his great story. Walter Alston managed the Dodgers, who also won in 55 and 59. Odds makers leaned towards his squad when they set the betting line. The reigning World Series champions battled Pittsburgh and San Francisco to the end of the season. They ultimately surpassed their formidable rivals. And so it stood to reason. Even though the Orioles clinched on September 22nd and boasted wonderful exuberance, they were green in postseason play, so stated in many a deliverance. Baltimore finished 66 with a very nice cushion. The rest of the AL stood far below. 9 games behind was the nearest squad, the dynamic Twins led by Tony O. Game 1. Baltimore racked up 3 runs in the top of the first inning. The Dodgers fans were taken aback, but did not give up on winning. Don Drysdale was their pitcher on this October 5th afternoon. His right arm was powerful. An apt metaphor would be a typhoon. Bauer sent up Dave McNally, who would turn 24 at the end of October. The young Orioles had a chance to win the series if you analyzed it sober. Baltimore went up 4-0 in the second when Snyder got an RBI single. Christmas came early for the O's, but they didn't need Kris Kringle. Lefevre knocked a solo home run, the only LA round tripper in the series. Baltimore's offense was exemplary so far. It prompted several queries. But Baltimore, McNally, walked 3 straight Dodgers. It happened in the bottom of the third. With bases loaded and 1 out, Bauer replaced this baby bird. He called on a journeyman from the bullpen to take over the pitching. His name was Mo Drabowski, and what he did was simply bewitching. Drabowski broke in with the Cubs in 56 and stayed for 5 years. He played for the Braves, Reds, and A's in the next stage of his career. He came to Baltimore in the offseason, no longer a starter, but a reliever. In game 1, the Dodgers suffered greatly. Drabowski was as sharp as a new cleaver. The first batter he faced was Parker, who struck out against the righty. But Dodgers were at every base. Their opportunity seemed mighty. Drabowski walked Gilliam, which brought home the second L.A. run. But Roseborough fouled out to Etchebarren. And so Baltimore's worry was done. With speed, precision, and control upon the ball that he dispatched, the right-hander struck out 11, a World Series record anyone has yet to match. The Orioles tallied another run, and the score stayed 5-2. They swept the Dodgers in four games. It was quite the baseball coup. Mo Drabowski did not have a Hall of Fame career, though he had a Hall of Fame day. But there's a sentimental postscript to the story that I hope you will convey. The Drabowskis had a daughter who suffered from leukemia. It took her life. Her name was Deborah. She was 2 months old. It was a time of immeasurable strife. She died on October 5th, 1959, 7 years before game one to the date, when Drabowski dominated the Dodgers and undeniably owned home plate. Facing the NL champs could be compared to Sisyphus and his boulder, but if you believe in heaven, then Mo Drabowski had an angel on his shoulder. Thank you. I told Mo's daughter, Beth, earlier this week, I said, we all cry in the Kral family. Who says you can't be romantic about baseball? When you leave here, and you're going to hear other sessions about the Orioles, you're going to hear about 66, and you're going to read about it, you're going to the game tonight, and you'll be awash in history, as we always are, whatever ballpark we're going to. I just hope you take that story about Mo with you, that with joy, there's always a story behind it of sadness and strife and challenges, and someone's battling something that you know nothing about. With that, I'll take any questions or comments. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Questions, comments? Anyone? Are we good on time, John?
Just a comment. On one of the screens, you had a photo of the Sports Illustrated preview issue.
Yeah.
It had a famous article written by a journalist named Mark Cram that was called Wink at a Homely Girl.
Oh, the H.L. Mencken quote.
Article because he grew up in Baltimore and sort of took some pot shots at the city.
Yeah.
Even though it was really a love letter to the
right.
city. And it's been a sort of famous article for Baltimore sports fans ever since it came out. So if ever you all go online, find an article called Wink at a Homely Girl by Mark Graham.
If you're a fan of The Wire, there's a scene where one of the characters mentions that poem by H.L. Mencken with that line in it.
Well, it was actually Mencken's epitaph.
Right.
Was Wink at a Homely Girl.
Right. By the way, the reason that you don't see Deborah's face is because their parents were afraid that the flash would hurt her eyes. That's the only picture that was given to me by Beth Morris, who's Mo's older daughter, and she said that's the only one. They didn't want to. That might not be the only one, but no pictures survive of her with her face. They just didn't want it to hurt her. Yes.
Yeah. I wrote the BioProject article about Drabowski, and one of the things that struck me, and I'm curious if you saw this too, but his stories about him being a practical joker and prankster seemed to start when he went to the bullpen. Before that, his image as a starting pitcher was as a very serious, studious Wall Street guy. I'm curious about if you ran into stories that contradict
that. Not really. I was focused more on the game, and then when I reached out to the Drabowski family, they were so open and effusive, I was delighted. So I really focused more on the game, and then, you know, realizing that, as I said, the teams were transplanted, and it's still rather new in the 60s to have them. John, how are we doing on time? John? Oh, you can't hear me. How are we doing on time?
All right.
Okay.
David?
Yes, sir.
there's some ambiguity about Mo Drabowski with respect to his religious heritage, given the timing of when he left Poland for the United States. Some reports say that his mother was Jewish. Others say that both of his parents were Catholic. Did you find the correct answer to that question?
I didn't delve too deeply into it, to be honest with you. I was really more interested in getting involved in his career. The journeyman aspect appealed to me. It's really the foot soldiers that carry baseball. There's always a Reggie Jackson. You know, there's always a Carl Yastrzemski. But Bucky Dent hit below 250 in 1978, and he hit 417 in the 78 World Series. Don Larsen, nobody would expect to pitch a perfect game in 56. It's these kinds of stories that really make up baseball. But I didn't go too deeply into what you're talking about.
Okay, let's thank David.
Thank you.